Welcome into another edition of Huddle Up with Bucky Brooks, J.P. Shadrick, John Osier from the Hyundai Studios at the Miller Electric Center in Jacksonville. Bucky Brooks with us from Los Angeles. We've got plenty to get to today. The NFL annual meeting review. John Osier was there in Orlando. Some major rule changes coming out of those meetings. And, of course, Doug Peterson. We'll hear from the head coach from the AFC Coaches Breakfast at the annual meeting earlier this week. And it is mock draft season. Bucky's latest mock just dropped, and another player coming to the Jaguars. All that in just a little bit. First of all, Bucky, good afternoon. How the heck are you?
I'm great, man. It couldn't be finer. We got the league years kicked off. I mean, John Osher's been working hard at the owners' meetings. I'm trying to listen in and see whatever he puts out to make sure that I'm up to date on all the happenings, and just waiting for the draft, man. Just waiting for the draft to come, you know?
And, Bucky, you got pro days the next couple of days, right? Where are you?
Yeah, so pro days, we have LSU. Jaden Daniels is going to put on a show down in Baton Rouge. And then we have Drake May, Devonta Tar Heel, going the next day on Thursday. See if we can shake up these quarterback rankings.
Are there vaunted Tar Heels in football?
I have
Lawrence, okay. Lawrence Taylor. Like
some LT. Some of the best players to ever do it.
There's LT and then
– Julius Peppers.
Famous Amos. I get Famous Amos.
Famous Amos. Like, you have to be local product to understand who Famous Amos is.
And then not like, as famous Buck.
Yeah, Bucky
Brooks. Means, I mean, like, there are a lot of guys. I mean, come on.
Famous Amos back in the day, man, was like a big deal, Buck.
Just for the name. Just for the name.
You grew
itself.
Up on him, right?
That I had,
he was in your wheelhouse growing up.
Yeah, I had little pictures of me and Amos Lawrence and Kelvin Bryant, who Kelvin Bryant was really my guy.
Kelvin Bryant was really good for a while. Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure Jags fans want to hear about all this Tar Heel lore, but yeah, Famous Amos.
We'll get to some of that coming up in just a little bit. And, of course, the latest mock draft just dropped, I believe, yesterday on NFL.com from Bucky Brooks. Well, the biggest news coming out of the annual meeting earlier this week in Orlando were some of the major rule changes. And, I mean, let's start with this kickoff rule, the XFL-style rule. Head coach Doug Peterson was asked about it before the vote to make it official. His thoughts on the possible change.
I think there was around 20% of the kickoffs, 21% of the kickoffs last year were returned, right? 0 out of 13 kickoffs in the Super Bowl, I think, were obviously not returned. You know, they were all touchbacks. I just think it's a play that has gone away in football. But we also got to remember, you know, it can also be a high injury rate play, you know. And so we got to think about player health and safety and keeping our guys healthy. So, you know, it's a unique proposal, obviously. I think there's more questions that have to be asked. And you know, we'll see where it goes.
All right. So apparently those questions were asked and answered by, you know, at least to the fulfillment of 29 owners, because it was a 29-3 vote just the next day. So in general, the kicker's at the 35. The other 10 players from the kicking team will line up at the opposing team's 40. The receiving team will have at least 9 players between the 35 and 30-yard lines. So the returners are in a landing zone, which is essentially in the red zone from the 20 to the goal line. Nobody can move until the ball is received. And then there you go. So that's the basic XFL rules, a few tweaks to that, Bucky. So first off, I mean, this is a huge change in the way the game will look. And, John, you've talked about this before. You want to kind of see it when you're sitting in a bar, make it look like football.
Yeah.
That's kind of the goal in a lot of these rules. Bucky, what's your reaction to this as a former player?
I actually like the fact that they're bringing the kickoff back. I think it's really important. Growing up in the league, they felt like the kickoff return was an offensive play. And, you know, the league has had great kickoff returners over the years. In the last few years, the kickoff was just a ceremonial play. People would tee it up, it would go through the end zone, we'd start and put the ball down in the offensive play. Well, now we have an opportunity to see the return game. And I think anyone who appreciates football can appreciate how special some of these returners in the league are. But now they get a chance to do it. Before we came on, I had a chance to look at some of those XFL numbers from kickoff returners. You had guys over 30 yards of return, guys in the high 20s. That's kind of where football was during its heyday. It'll take some time for special teams coaches to adapt to kind of teaching a different technique when it comes to the new formation. But I like seeing guys have an opportunity to create big plays in the kicking game. If you're going to talk about the third phase being an equal part of the game plan and how you must win in the kicking game and those things, where you got to give those guys an opportunity to have an impact, this new proposal gives them an opportunity to have an impact on the kickoff return game.
Well, it's not an equal part, but I get your point.
What do you mean it's not? It's three phases.
Three phases.
It's part of a phase.
Let's go in this day and age, let's go 55% offense. 30, because that's the way, clearly with the hip drop rule, the league is clearly just all offense. But that's another topic. Look, my sense is I'm with Bucky. I like the fact that they are trying to bring this back into the game. I was kidding about the special teams thing earlier. I get the idea, Buck, that probably there's going to be some clunkiness to it for the first year of it. And probably my guess is some things they have to revisit to make sure that it looks right and it's being done as they want it. But if you're going to adapt and you're going to get the league overall safer, which I think to save the league over the next 50 years, it has to be safer. It can't be perceived as a concussion league, a mega dangerous league. Parents have to want their kids to play the sport. All that's involved with all this. If you're going to have the league still be the league, you have to make some of these changes. So I think this is a nice step toward getting it back. My sense is it may look a little different in 2028 than it does in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, some of that is, yeah, you talk about like making it safe and for the parents and those things. But a lot of it is to head off the lawsuits that were coming from former players. I mean, that's what a lot of that is. Hey, we put legislation in. We've taken some of these things out because the hip drop tackle, like while it's nice to ban it in theory, it's harder in practical terms because when you're a player and you're 195 pounds and Derrick Henry's coming around the corner and they're saying, hey, just wrap him up at 250 pounds and take him down, that's not a realistic way to do it. What's going to happen, and no one wants to do this because the league has always existed where there was a gentleman's agreement between players. Hey, man, I won't hit you in your knees. I won't chop you down. I won't cut you down unless I absolutely have to. Well, now when you take away being able to hit people up high, you now can't kind of wrestle and grab them down without swiveling. The only recourse for players is to just chop and roll everybody at the knees. And so, like, we hate it, but as a defensive player, you really don't have a choice because I'm not going to get a penalty and I'm not going to keep paying significant fines. The one thing that I do know I can do is I can just torpedo everybody right at the knees, and there are no penalties for that.
But isn't that sort of the problem, Buck, that they're taking so many things away? I mean, they've taken so many things away from defensive guys and the interested player safety. And I don't know the answer. I mean, I'm with you. They had to do a lot of these things to prevent the lawsuits and in the long run save the NFL, I think. You know, or at least have it look somewhat like it looks. But they've taken a lot away from defensive players.
Yeah, and as you said, at 55% leaning towards the offense, you have owners who want to see, points light up because that is what fans appreciate. They want to see quarterbacks have big numbers because we've romanticized the quarterback position and those things. So we get all that. But the one thing that continues to adapt and change, defenses. A couple years ago, scoring way up. Now scoring's back down. Defensive coordinators, defensive players are guys that adapt. And so they'll adapt to this. We may not like what it looks like when they adapt, but I would say if I'm a coach, the only thing that I can coach my guys to do is to take everybody out below the knees to get them down. You got to practice it, but you'll see more of those tackles than the traditional wrap, squeeze, roll them down. Because a lot of that crocodile death roll stuff that we're seeing was kind of a byproduct of some of the stuff that the Seahawks did when they took the head out the game with the Hawks roll tackle. Now you will see other measures to tackle because you got to be able to tackle to play good defense. And at some point, you got to get guys down by any means necessary.
Would you even bring in like a rugby style instructor for that? Or is that too much?
Yeah, I mean, I think you certainly bring those guys in. And people have gone down that road over the last decade because part of what the Seahawks were doing when Pete Carroll had the initiative with the Seahawks tackle, that kind of came from rugby style tackling. Now, what I would have to ask rugby experts, do they have issues with the hip drop tackle? Is that a part of their game? If it's not a part of their game, well, how do they make similar tackles when you're dealing with guys at those angles? The guy's heavier than you. He's running side by side. How do I get him down? All those things have to be discussed and talked about. And really the onus is on the coaches and the players to figure out how to drill it, how to rep it, so guys can get comfortable making these things. But, I mean, you're asking guys who play football a certain way for 20 years for some guys, like, to now change at the drop of a hat. It's kind of nuts. But, look, I get it, but I also understand the consequences that are going to happen when guy defenders have to kind of change how they go about doing their business.
Well, you're going to have knee injuries, and in 2 years they're going to take that away.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, they're going to have to do something, but that's what you're going to do, because people got mad when years ago when Rob Gronkowski got hit low. The defender's like, man, what do you want me to do? I can't hit you up high. I can't hit you in the thing. You have a 50, 60-pound weight difference. The only thing I can do is to get you down. You're going to see it. It's unfortunate, and yeah, it's not a player-driven thing, which makes it tough, because I think if you ask most offensive players, they will tell you, like, hey, man, like, if you can take care of my knees and all that other stuff, like, hit me high or whatever. But now you put it in the hands of others, and so guys have to adapt. The players are the last ones to kind of know what's going on. But they'll adapt, they'll adjust, and they'll figure out a way to make it right.
It's the Huddle Up Podcast. J.P. Shadrick, John Hosier, Bucky Brooks. Also at the NFL annual meeting this week in Orlando, head coach Doug Peterson at the AFC Coaches Breakfast, talking about the Jaguars' culture and what he wanted to instill, and explaining some of the signings in this free agency process.
This is the culture that I want to establish in Jacksonville, and this is the reason why you go get guys like Mitch Morse and Eric Armsteads and the Darnell Savages and guys that have been to the postseason. These guys have been captains on their teams, and, you know, they've been to Super Bowls. They've been to AFC Championship games. You know, so these guys know how to win, and that's kind of the influx of talent that we want to bring onto this, our young roster, guys that have been there, done that, and I've got to continue to message the team in the right way, and you know, there's got to be a sort of a confidence about you that, you know, when you take the field on game day, that, hey, you know, yeah, you there's going to be game, you're going to get beat. I understand that, but you got to have that confidence and that swagger that, you know, you're going to get the job done, you know, on game day, and I think bringing in some of these free agents we did this spring are going to help that.
The full press conference available at Jaguars.com. John, you were sitting right there with him.
Yeah, and Bucky, to me, the money quote there, yes, the free agents. I think the stat that I found was, you know, the Bills, Packers, Ravens, and 49ers, which is where the bulk of this free agency class is from, 17 playoff appearances in the last 5 years combined. So clearly that was a thing. But to me, the money word there was swagger. It felt in the last six or seven games of last year, Doug really felt the team lacked that ability to sort of grab the season by its throat and make sure it didn't go down the tank. You talk to him in, like, you know, the key moments. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, you're absolutely reading it right. And I think it will not only be reflected in the free agents that are brought in, but I think you'll see a change in the guys that are drafted in terms of where they come from, how much success they had as collegiate players. The one thing that you're trying to do when you flip a program is you want a locker room full of winners, guys that have won at every level, guys that understand the commitment, the sacrifice that it takes to win, guys that are willing to kind of step back for the greater good of the team to make sure that the team has success. So it takes the right kind of guys to fit that in. And so it's not necessarily assembling the most talented roster. It's building the best team. And in building the best team, all of the pieces of the puzzle have to kind of fit together. I think part of what Doug is looking for, guys that have won, guys that understand how to play well in these high-pressure moments, and you hope that you have enough of those older players that can teach and show the younger players how to handle those moments, because you only get experience by playing in those games, and the Jaguars are hopeful that they will play in more of those meaningful games, but you got to have people to show the young guys how to get it done.
Plenty ahead. We're back in a moment with a look at the offseason program and Bucky Brooks' latest mock draft. This is the Huddle Up Pod. Welcome back to the Huddle Up Podcast. The Jaguars are celebrating their 30th season, and the time to get your 2024 season ticket membership is right now. Be at the bank for every touchdown and secure your seats at jaguars.com/tickets or call 904-633-2000. JP Shadrick, John Osher, Bucky Brooks.
Now, JP, you're about to give me off-season dates, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's, yeah.
All right, I can't wait. Please tell me when OTAs start.
April 15th is strength and conditioning.
Okay, it's big. That's big.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Let's get some of these weights.
Let's start with that. I'll look for the official date of OTAs, but it's coming. I think it's like 2 or 3 weeks after that.
I can't wait.
It's a few weeks after that. Normally, right after the draft, a week after draft, you have the rookie minicamp. That rookie minicamp will kind of lead right into like OTAs, depending on how you break it up. I can't wait for John O to update me with those daily reports of how many completions, how many balls hit the ground, who's starring, who's going to make the team based off of their performances in OTAs. I always look forward to that from JO.
JP can vouch for you because he's here. You're out in Los Angeles in the sunshine, Bucky. But the four or five weeks leading into OTAs, it's like being around a kid at Christmas for me. I can't wait, and the build up the night before OTAs, I don't sleep very well. It's really what I live for. It's kind of my thing.
Hopefully you're doing just like the players. You're working yourself into shape, that peak fitness. So when you're standing around watching everybody, like, you are just like them. You're ready to go. You're in championship form.
Unfortunately, I am at peak fitness. This is about as peaked as it gets.
For the record, phase one is 2 weeks long, and it's just strength and conditioning. Phase two is 3 weeks long, but there are coaches allowed on the field, individual drills. There's no offense versus defense. Then phase three is 3 weeks of 10 total OTAs, and that's a four-week span.
So they have a mini camp right after that.
Yeah, we're looking at about a month and a half until OTAs.
Can't wait. It's gonna be special this year.
It's gonna be different. This is gonna be the best off season that we've had. We're gonna hear people talk about it's the best they've been, the best shape they've ever been in, ready to go.
Mock draft time.
Yeah, Bucky, your latest mock draft dropped, I believe, yesterday on NFL.com, and it's all over NFL Network. The pundits are discussing it. They did it on Good Morning Football. They went all through it.
Is this V 3.0?
This is it.
Yeah, 3.0. Okay.
You don't even remember. You probably did this once.
I don't
even
remember.
You put it in the bank.
Yeah, I don't even remember. I might have done this one at the car wash. I don't know.
Well, let me refresh your memory. At number 17, the Jaguars are selecting Alabama cornerback Terrion Arnold in your 3.0 draft.
Look, I like Terrion Arnold. Coming from Alabama, he's a high IQ player. He is someone who has position flexibility, meaning he can bounce all over the secondary and play. At Alabama, he spent some time playing their star position, which would be the nickel position for us. But he's also played outside. And I heard Doug talk about this when he was describing Darnell Savage and Antonio Johnson. He talked about just having the ability to kind of reshuffle the deck when it comes to nickel situations. Teams are in nickel about 75% of the time. So in Arnold, you have a guy that can start out outside. He can slide inside. It just gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of how you want to match up with the teams. And the fact that he's a really high IQ player with great technique, I think he really fits what they're looking for at the position.
And Bucky, I'll give you a lot of credit where it's due. I've been talking for 2 or 3 weeks about having to maybe rethink how we talk about this defense and not talk about it so much as a 4-3-4, but talk about it more as, I've been saying 4-2-5, but maybe you just talk about it as a four-man front, and then the back's going to be so many things that it's hard to really define.
It's a 4-7.
Yeah, I mean, it's talk about that a little bit, because you educated me on that a few weeks ago. That's not just this defense. It's really the entire league right now, but how does it really apply to this defense?
Yeah, no, I mean, the entire league is living in sub-packages, and so what you mean by sub-packages? Substitution packages where you're putting different personnel on the field to match up. So sometimes that might mean five defensive backs on the field. Sometimes it could mean six, defensive backs on the field and one linebacker and four D linemen. People change and vary up what they want to have. Sometimes you have two D linemen, two linebackers, and like a bunch of DBs on the field. It really depends on who you're playing and what you have and what the strengths of the team are. It's important when you're trying to make that transition and shift to being a team that's a little more adaptable, a little more matchup-centric. You have to have enough pieces and enough weapons to give the defensive coordinator that flexibility. You've heard Doug talk about position versatility and how important that is. It's important because it allows you to kind of get your best 11 on the field at all times. And the more that you can do enhances your opportunity to get on the field. That might be maybe the biggest shift in the defense, being able to be a little more adaptable and creative while staying within the framework of a system and a scheme that's been fairly successful throughout the league.
So how do you do that, Bucky? Pete Prisco and I were talking about it on the podcast yesterday, I think. You know, I think realistically you're going to see some safeties in what outsiders think of as, quote, the nickel role. Antonio Johnson and Savage, it almost feels to me like it's going to be sort of weird to even call them, quote, safety and or nickel. That it's just going to be a position that's maybe, as you say, a hybrid position. But at some point, you sort of need a cover nickel too, right? I mean, like, I guess that's the art of being a defensive coordinator within this, is sort of knowing how to get those guys into positions where they don't get exposed, where they're in the right look for the right time. You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, no, it's a challenge. And yeah, you have multiple guys that can play that. So when you and Pete are having that conversation, a lot of it is, hey, man, we can do all these things on the whiteboard, but how much of it can we practice? Because we have to rep it to be able to be good at it in games. And how much can our guys handle when it comes to processing? That's why the high IQ part will come into the situation now. When you think about changing the defense, you're going to need smart players to be able to do heavy volume, high volume stuff. So I think you'll see a shift in that. We've already seen some of those things. But to put the best 11 on the field, yeah, you're going to have some guys that can go inside and are comfortable playing inside. It is a different position playing the nickel or the dime position because you're inside. You've got to be physical enough in the run game to act like a linebacker, but you need to be nimble and athletic enough to be able to play guys in space, those quick jitterbugs that are in the slot. Everybody can't handle that job description. I think that is a huge need for the Jags. You got to try and find who can be that slot defender that can get it done.
Who else do you consider at 17? Everybody's got Terry Arnold this week. He's the flavor of the month.
Yeah, Terry Arnold, because I think Quinion Mitchell won't be there. But if he's not there, there are a handful of corners that could play there. Nate Wiggins is a really good player from Clemson. Super fast. Obviously, he ran super fast at the combine, but he's really thin, 175 pounds. That can be problematic when you're playing against some of these big-bodied wide receivers, not only in the league, but within the division. Nate Wiggins will be considered. You're here. Cooper DeJean talked about the kid from Iowa who's a super athlete, can play anywhere on the field, corner, safety, nickel, dime, whatever it is, can return kicks and punts. He's a fantastic player. Got hurt at the end of the Iowa season, but he'll be in consideration. You hear Kamari Lassiter, his name bandied about, Kool-Aid McKinstry. So there are a handful of guys that can go there. But if you ask me, I think this is a situation where the Jags need to double up at the position, meaning take one early, then come back and take another one in a mid-round. So maybe a first-round corner, then come back and take a third-round corner, like a Max Melton, like a Daquan Hardy. So there are a bunch of guys that can play. How committed are you to overhauling your depth chart to make sure that you have enough players to play the style that Ryan Nielsen wants to play?
A lot of commitment to DB, JP.
It's a lot. You got to have it, though.
You got to have it.
You got to have it.
Look at it this way.
Wouldn't you like to have more draft picks?
Yeah, you spent your money in free agency on the front line, right? And hopefully Josh Allen will get done. But if you think about it, you got high-priced free agent in Eric Armstead. You have another high-priced homegrown free agent in Josh Allen. You got a first-round pick in Trayvon Walker. I mean, that's a lot of capital up front. Now in the back end, you have to figure out how to do it, I would say, on the cheap. And on the cheap would be through the draft. So even though it's significant draft capital to take some money in the first round, on paper, it's a lot cheaper to do that than to get into LeJarius Sneed business and we saw the contract be signed. So you have to make those choices, and you also have to make those choices with an eye towards paying your quarterback, because once Trevor Lawrence gets paid, ain't a whole lot of other people that's going to get paid. So you're going to have to do it with draft and develop type players on both sides of the ball.
The Mock Draft 3.0, Bucky Brooks, available now, NFL.com.
It's almost a Bible, really. I mean, it's almost a draft Bible, the version 3.0.
I mean, some of that. Some would say.
Just wait till 4.0.
And if you think 3.0 is something, just wait till 4.
Until the New Testament.
You wait till 4.0 comes out. That's the one.
You've been saving it. You've been saving the good stuff.
Saving some of it.
Bucky, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you again next week.
Oh, man, it was a lot of fun. Hope you guys
Bucky, us. Thanks.
Bucky Brooks, John Osier, I'm JP Shadricker. Thanks to Joe Fortunato and Brent Reber, and thanks to you for listening to the Huddle Up Podcast.